And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Oh, boy. Hey there, you people out there.
Do you realize we're not live anymore?
You're dead. Speak for yourself. I'm still alive.
We used to be live.
What do you consider it?
Now we're podcasting.
Podcasting. Podcasting. All right, see, Malcolm.
When we did another...
Hush,
okay, introduce the show.
This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here, and we are at the Mark Grau Studio in Burbank, California. With me is Malcolm Berman, my producer, and illustrious wingman. And with us today is our special guest, Claudia, not Day, but D. Martino. Claudia, how the hell are you?
I'm fantastic. I mean, look who I'm sitting with today. My goodness.
That's a good attitude.
Did you realize that we're actually three guys from Brooklyn? Because when I met Claudia, I find out that she is from Brooklyn around my neighborhood. And she also went to my high school.
Yep. Well, I didn't know you owned it.
I owned it.
Okay. Makes sense.
Okay.
Lincoln High School. By the way, we're on malcolmdigitalradio.com.
Well, yeah, that's a given.
Well, people who might be tuning in at the last moment on YouTube won't know where we are.
malcolmdigitalradio.com. Don't forget the .com. Otherwise, you go nowhere.
But we have to keep on promoting that, which we haven't been doing in the shows, because otherwise people are lost. Did you know where we were?
It took me a while to find you, but if I Google Malcolm Digital Radio, then I find you. Google is my friend.
Google. Yeah, it's everybody's friend.
It says, go to Coney Island, Brooklyn, and that's where he is.
It used to be the D train. Last stop, Coney Island, all off.
Oh, shades of the past.
Boy, I remember those trains. It was a different era, everything was different about it.
Well, I went to, I think I mentioned to you, I went to CCNY up in Harlem, up on 125th Street. Mm-hmm. So I had to take a bus to the train.
Yeah.
Right. And then the train I got on was like the train alone, the D train, was like from Coney Island to 125th Street.
It went straight? You didn't have to change?
No.
Oh, cool.
If I stopped off at 42nd Street, I could get the A train. Because the A train stopped from 42nd Street, it went directly to 125th Street.
So like in the song, you could take the A train.
I took the A, yeah. Okay. I used to sing that song all the time.
Yeah,
I don't know if there are any words to it.
Yeah,
that's a very good question.
Yeah, I used to take the F train to Baruch on 23rd, because I didn't want to switch to the IRT, so I would just walk from 6th down to Lex.
Don't you mean 23rd?
23rd.
Okay. I thought you said 123rd.
No, 23rd.
Okay.
No,
most of my friends went to downtown CCNY.
Yeah, we used to call that the downtown city.
Downtown city, okay.
Yeah, because I was uptown city.
They called it City College of New York Downtown. But that was a whole different era.
It's like
Claudia, what have you been doing?
Since
what do you want to do? What do you want to talk about? Otherwise, we're going to throw some very tough questions.
We talk about politics.
Oh, my gosh.
No, you don't want to talk about politics.
No, I don't want to talk about
politics. Let me first introduce her.
I can't take anymore.
Introduce her.
Okay,
give her
Claudia
background.
Claudia has I looked her up, and she has a lot of IMDb credits. She's been on a gazillion different shows, and she's been an actress, a writer, God, you name it. If it has anything to do with the entertainment industry, I think she's done it.
Yes. I'm living my dream, is what
Great.
I'm doing.
That's good.
Well, how long have you started in the entertainment industry? I know you had a life previous to
that. Yes, I did. Actually, I was in corporate America in marketing for like 22 years in New York.
What did you market?
Beauty products. I worked in the beauty industry. I worked for the major companies.
Is it true? Somebody told me a long time ago, the guy worked, I think he worked for Avon as an engineer. And they were upstate New York, like in the Suffern area.
Well, they have many distribution centers.
Well, anyway, he said that whatever product is made, lipstick, perfume, you name it, anything in the beauty industry, approximately 10% of the cost is for the product and about 90% is for the packaging.
And advertising. And,
well, advertising is a big part of it. Merchandising.
Well, advertising and packaging.
Yeah.
But is that about?
It varies. It varies between the ingredients and everything like that. But, you know, like any business, you have your cost of goods, you have your overhead, you've got everything that is built into your P&Ls and everything like that. So, and what I used to love, for some reason, I could look at a P&L and I could just zone in on where the problems were. I don't know why, but it was a gift.
Are you an accountant?
No, I was in marketing. I was in marketing. My undergraduate's in marketing. My master's is in management. And, the thing I had the most fun with, which was kind of a telltale sign for me, is I thoroughly enjoyed the advertising portion of my job. I enjoyed developing products, the creative side. I hated the number crunching.
So you're an artist.
Yeah, I am. I discovered it, yes.
So did you like coming up the concepts of products and implementing that?
Yeah, absolutely. Working with the consumers, doing focus groups, doing research. Because what used to drive me crazy is that there's so much market research out there, but the products fail. It's like 80% of products fail.
Is that the number, 80%?
80%, yeah.
And why is that?
Because you start with a concept, and then it changes 400 different ways to Sunday, so by the time it gets out to the consumer, it's not even meeting a need anymore. I was very much in the place of it has to meet a need. Give what the consumers what they need.
Well, when you come up with an idea, does it go through a different selection process? Are there people over you or under you or beside you that have the ability to cancel you out or automatically add or detract?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, unless one is an entrepreneur with their own business, there's always a chain of command.
So your idea, as good as it may be, by the time it's done, maybe something totally different.
Yeah. It could be improved or it could be...
It's just like the President of the United States.
Yeah.
When it has a bill, it keeps on changing.
It keeps on changing, exactly. So what happened was I spent 22 years, and then I was in Manhattan on 9/11. And that was my defining moment.
9/11
was my defining moment.
Explain.
It's a day we'll all never forget. And
I tried to forget it.
I haven't forgotten it.
No, I can't forget it because it's my wedding anniversary.
Oh, my goodness.
No, in fact, we're going to...
That's when everything crashed.
Okay.
No, we're going to Las Vegas for a wedding anniversary.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. It's not that far away.
No, 22 years.
Ah, wow.
So,
that's great.
Is that so you could lose everything else?
I have nothing to lose.
Well, 22 to Mazel Tov.
Now, while we met before we went on and also now, you've blurted out a couple of Yiddish words, okay?
Yes.
Now, but you're not Jewish.
No, Italian, Catholic. I was raised.
You see,
But it was an Italian-Jewish neighborhood.
Right.
So,
yeah, because
you know.
To me, there's hardly any difference. In fact, there's a well-known comedian, female comedian, you know, with the I-E-N-N-E.
Mm-hmm.
I think her name is Joy Behar.
Joy Behar. She's on The View now, yeah.
I could have sworn she was Jewish all the time I've seen her on TV.
Mm-hmm.
She looked it, she acted it, she spoke it, everything. The nuances, the hand move, everything. And then she told a funny story on TV one time. Her mother calls her to wish her, happy Passover. And then she said, but Ma, I'm not Jewish.
Yeah, her mother didn't even know it. There's a comedian, David Steinberg.
Yeah.
And David comes from a very religious family. I think, you know, the cantors and rabbis. Mm-hmm. And he married a Catholic girl. I think since they're divorced, but he married a Catholic girl. And he was on Johnny Carson one time, and they asked him, they said, David, how's it working out? You know, you're a Jewish guy, and she's a Catholic girl. He said, it's perfect. I teach her guilt, and she teaches me sin. It's a flip side of the coin.
I guess he didn't go to Catholic school.
No.
And being grew up in an Italian family. Yeah. We have both.
That is funny.
Oh, I went to – there's a marvelous play, and it's called Catechism. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No. I'm getting chills just thinking about Catechism.
I still might be playing it forever. And you go there, and it's like the actress up front plays a part of the nun.
Okay.
And she starts doing it. Now,
she comes around and wraps you on the knuckles or something like that?
Yeah, I have no experience at it, of course. Yeah, I've been a nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn. Yeah. But I was with a friend of mine, and his name is Kavanaugh, a nice Irish, who went through the whole thing, and he loved it. He thought it was so perfect. But the thing that I could relate to, there was a couple that came in late, and they started sitting down, and the actress says, "Don't sit down. Why did you come late?" Like it was actual class.
Well, did you ever see this play Nonsense?
No.
Okay, I saw that on Off-Broadway twice. I loved it. And it was a lot of audience interaction as well. And it was like a blast from the past. And they would have the nuns just have the clickers to shut us up.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All of a sudden, he hit because we were talking.
There used to be a restaurant in L.A. I don't know if it's still there. It was there maybe 20 years ago, roughly. 25 years, and it was a restaurant based on the 50s.
Okay.
Called Prohibition. No, I wouldn't.
This is way after Prohibition. And the waitress, dressed like a waitress from the 50s, and she had a very nasty attitude, and that was a put on, the nasty attitude. What do you want? If she didn't like what you said to her, she'd take a ruler out and smack it down on the table. I'd scare them, whatever. That reminded me of the nuns coming around. No. You didn't know your lesson, whack.
But you're Jewish. How do you know? How do you remember the nuns hitting you?
I read a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
But actually, there was a whole chain of them. Those restaurants. I forget. There was a big one on La Cienega in Beverly Hills.
I think it was on La Cienega.
And the big thing was they had all the rock music.
Mm-hmm.
It was like Happy Days type of thing.
But you don't remember the name?
I will probably after the show is over, and I'll have to tell you next week.
It won't do me any good then.
But anyway, Claudia, we're back to 9/11 2000, and all of a sudden you had an epiphany.
Had an epiphany, and I realized life is too short. And I was not happy. I was working around the clock.
I'm gonna add something crazy.
To that. Go ahead.
At the ultimate very, very best, life is too short.
I remember looking outside the window. I was on the 7th floor on 6th Avenue, and I saw people coming up
from... What was your cross street?
6th and 46th.
Okay, so you were away from
Midtown,
me.
Yeah. But I was looking out the window, and I saw people. The subways weren't working, buses, nothing. You know, so people were walking up 6th Avenue from downtown, covered in all the soot. And they looked like zombies. And I'm going to get a little emotional right now because it hasn't left me. And I just said, I can't do this anymore. And I didn't know what I was going to do, but I stayed another 2 months. And then things happened and blah, blah, blah. But I left corporate in November of 2001.
And when did you get the I just want to check one thing. Aaron, her voice is low. Are we getting this okay?
It sounds really good.
Okay.
Okay.
That's right. I just want to make a check.
You were just
I woke him up,
with him because he wanted to make sure he wasn't sleeping.
My eyes are open.
I can see that.
Yeah, but you. I know people sleep with their eyes open. That's why I want the camera in your room. I want to check. I want to check on you.
Anyway, Claudia, when did you get the acting bug?
Well, it was so funny because you know when life tends to throw up. And it's like, that's
what
happened. Yeah,
I know that feeling very well.
That was yesterday morning.
Well, you know, it's like, sometimes it just comes in waves. And in the end of 2001 into 2002, my grandmother died. My mother almost died from renal failure from medication. My dad needed open heart surgery. And it was like, I need to do something for fun.
They come in threes.
Yeah.
So you just had your three. Okay.
Exactly. So I remember somebody telling me about the Learning Annex in New York City. And it's like, okay, I need to do something for fun.
Okay.
All right, I'll do it. So I look up and I see this class on commercials for real people. And I'm like, I'm a real people. So I signed up and I had a blast. And I didn't know the teacher teaching was a major manager in New York City. So I was very professional. I asked intelligent, quote unquote, questions. And before I knew it, I got a call from a casting director to take classes on commercials. So me being the cynic that I am, I figured it was a big scam, you know. But I checked it out, and it was legitimate. So here I am. I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do next in life, and I'm setting up a business as a consultant. But meanwhile, I'm going down to Manhattan now, taking classes two nights a week for commercials.
Well, you said down to Manhattan. Where
I was in. I was living in Westchester County in Tarrytown.
Okay.
And then that led to scene study classes, and now I'm down.
And
I was in the bug. Oh yes, and it was like. You know when everything in you just comes out? And it's funny because my family, at the age, when I was 4 years old, my family called me the little actress. Because I could do whatever characters were on TV and movies. I used to drag my poor cousins. I made up plays and stuff, and I used to drag them into my creative world. Before I knew it, I was networking through New York. I did a showcase, and the casting director who was doing the showcase invited a lot of people in the industry in New York, and producers, agents, managers. The next day, I get a call from an agent. I know nothing. I'm learning as I go.
You felt comfortable on stage?
I love it.
I was doing documentaries back east, and I decided to take acting classes to see how it would feel on the other side of the camera. And I went to HB Studios downtown.
Yeah.
Except before I could do a scene on the stage in front of my class, I would get nervous. Once I got on stage, I had total control.
Yeah.
But before I got on, my stomach would gurgle and I couldn't take that. I said, no, I want to be the other side of the camera.
Yeah.
But you liked it.
I loved it. What's funny, because I was in marketing and corporate, and I used to go to sets to shoot the commercials, and I was the client, and I was always be on the other side of the camera. Mm-hmm. But I always wanted to be in front of the camera.
Well, that's where I know you're from, because I used to produce commercials, but before you, I used to produce commercials.
You're
and
older than her, Mel.
Yeah.
I know.
A lot older.
But that's okay. We used to fly out here to do commercials.
Now, we knew each other in another life.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're rediscovering each other now.
Right.
Not the next life,
No, we have to discover which life it was. We don't know yet.
You have to think about it. I know.
When we first met, and I only know we're like,
two weeks.
There was synergy. I have to explain. Sound like my wife. You don't have to explain.
That's because she knows what you're going to say anyway.
That's true.
And she doesn't want to hear it again.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm open.
Continue.
Now, where was I?
So I
met this agent, and he called me. I went to go see him the next day. We hit it off. And in New York, they don't sign contracts like they do here. It's freelance, sort of. And he sends me on my first major audition for Law & Order, the original show. And I do my thing. I hit it off with the casting director. She was a little verklempt because she was why not? I'll throw it out there.
Well, she's in the right industry.
I'm in the right industry, right place right now. And she was having childcare issues at the moment. So I said, that's okay. I said, I work in Sunday school at church. I understand completely and blah, blah, blah. So it wound up that I auditioned, and then they called me back for a different role. And I became a forewoman on one of the episodes. And it was my very first major audition. I get my SAG card, first shot out of the barrel.
What, do you get the card just for the audition? Don't you have to, get up there and
do the work? No, not for an audition. I did the work.
Oh,
I was on
the
show.
Then you get your card.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you have to have a certain amount of lines here or something.
We have one line.
One line?
That's it. And I had two lines. I was so excited.
Why did you just play a dead body? Does that count?
I didn't want to be a dead body. I didn't go in for a dead body.
My cousin used to do that. He died since, but he used to go and be like background. He was a background guy in the background.
Yeah.
He liked it. And one time he got to play a dead body. He got paid three times as much, and he didn't say a word.
Exactly.
I forget the name of the movie, but it was about college kids that had graduated like a few years, and they came back to meet each other because one of their friends died. And I think there was a dead body. But I think the dead body was Kevin Costner, who played the role of the dead person, which was his first role.
And it's been a long time ago.
I forget it. It was William Hurt was in there. A lot of famous people, but I forget the name. Again, I'll remember that
when you go home, at the end of the show.
And I'll call it. Anyway, continue.
Yeah, so.
Who did you play with? Who was in the cast of
Sam Waterston was the DA.
He must be worth about $400 million. He's in so many shows.
Go ask him what you'll find out, you know.
Well, but he probably gets a lot from royalties.
And Jerry Orbach, was he one of the cops?
Yeah, but you know what it is? I was in the legal side of the show, the second half of the show, but I met Jerry Orbach backstage, as you know, was in the kitchen area and stuff. What a lovely man.
He was such a talent.
He was so giving and just so... just loving. He was just wonderful.
Did you know that he used to do musicals?
Yes, of course.
I think he might have been the original cast of... I think it was Fantastics.
Oh, did he really?
Either that or...
He was in the Three Penny Opera.
Yeah,
he was a song and dance man.
100 years ago.
Theater de Lys. That was the first play I ever saw. Theater de Lys in the
city. Did you know he was the candlestick in Beauty and the Beast?
No.
Yes, he is.
The voiceover, yeah.
How much did he get paid for that?
They got paid for a lot in voiceovers. That's such a fantastic field.
But a wonderful man. Very talented.
He seemed nice.
He played a lot of cop movies. Yeah, I have to tell you, he fit the part for a detective, not for a guy on the street. But he had the right kind of attitude. He probably hung out with a number of them to... pick up the nuances.
Well, I think he did so many episodes of Law and Order. He was
better
than Cobb.
It was on a long time.
Him, who was the DA? It wasn't Waterston. He was the
Sam Waterston. Yeah, he was the DA.
Sam Waterston came the DA. He was the assistant DA.
No, he was the DA.
Because I think it was Stephen Hill.
I'm forgetting.
Stephen Hill.
No, it was after
back.
That. I'm forgetting Elizabeth
then
Rome. I think
Fred Thompson. No, they were ADAs.
Was Elizabeth Rome, I think her name was.
Yeah, she was but she was an ADA.
Yeah, Fred Thompson. My episode. Yeah,
Fred Thompson was the
DA
after I think Stephen Hill.
It was Hill, Thompson.
Fred Dalton Thompson.
Yeah. You know, it's funny.
Yeah,
for
Senate.
I went to an event recently honoring Dick Wolf.
Yeah.
And
Is he still alive?
Oh, yeah. It was just this year. The place was packed. And the question was asked, how many people here got their first role on Law & Order?
Everybody.
Not everybody, but a lot of us raised our hand.
Well, they have a Law & Order Criminal Intent, Law & Order
SCV. You know
what?
I still watch reruns. And you know what? I never saw it before. I had watched that program many, many, many times. But these reruns, I don't know, I must have missed so many because they're all like brand new to me.
Well, it's been on about, 14 years or so?
Oh, it's longer. It's off. Yeah, it's on about 14 years, yeah.
Only 14?
Only 14, yeah.
Seems longer.
Well, anyway, getting back to your...
We're digressing.
So we're going off on tangents, which is fine.
Oh, by the way, tangent. You're listening to The View from Over Here on Malcolm Digital Radio, in case you just tuned in.
Oh, Malcolm, please.
That's the only... There's no station breaks. We go straight through. People have to know where they're listening.
Why? Do they have to go to the bathroom in the middle
of everything? No, they might come in. They might go YouTube, and they're coming in the middle of the show, and they don't know where the hell they're listening.
Good. Now, what about the person who comes on, let's say, 2 minutes from now? You want to do another advertising spot?
Go listen to radio and see how many times they advertise where they are, where you see the little thing. We can't do that because Aaron doesn't know how to do the little subtitles. The View from Over Here, Malcolm Digital Radio. Anyway,
whatever.
Continue. Stop laughing.
It doesn't take much. Trust me, it just doesn't.
She's a very good audience.
That's one of my special skills is infectious laughter, and it doesn't take much to get me going.
Can you giggle? Okay, giggle. Let's hear you giggle. Giggle.
You carry your own laughing gas internally.
I do.
Okay. Let's hear you giggle.
I do.
Okay, now we'll have 30 seconds of giggling.
Oh, I have to tell this story. This was so funny.
Before you tell the story, can you cry on demand?
I can, yes.
Really?
I can, yes.
Wow.
Because it's not about just crying. It's about being able to understand and digest what's going on.
So there's nobody in back of you pinching you or sticking you with a needle to make you cry.
No, it's like, I have to be so entrenched in what I'm doing.
All right.
You know,
when we've talked about some topics.
Anyway, she has a story to tell.
She cries. You cry very easily.
I do. I have very deeply emoted.
You're a sad person.
No, I'm not.
No. For some reason, it reminds me of the Abbott Costello routine. Which one?
There's so many.
Susquehanna Hat Company. Slowly
I turn
step by step, inch by inch. And she laughs.
Somebody sent me a little live emoticon from the Inside Out animated feature, Joy. That's how people see me, as Joy.
Joy.
Just constantly, you know.
Well, I told you, I see you as a, well, you see sort of like who I met, Doris Roberts,
yeah,
that you could be sort of like very kind, but give a biting remark.
Yeah.
And that people have to, did she really mean that to her?
I'm the younger version.
Right.
I'd like to think I'm kind of quirky, but I think of myself as the live version, as a cross between Doris Roberts and B. Arthur. Where Doris Roberts was the motherly, you know, sweet, but she had that biting remark.
Oh.
And B. Arthur was that...
Acerbic.
Acerbic. She was sharp, intelligent, but she had those biting, sarcastic remarks.
But she's also about 6'2".
I didn't even come close to that, you know.
Anyway, we interrupted you.
Yeah, go back.
That's okay.
We always...
When I was here like about 10 months, and I got invited to a dress rehearsal, not a dress rehearsal, a rehearsal for the show The Drowsy Chaperone. And it was going to be at the theater across from the Amazon, the I forget what they called it.
Music Center.
Across from the Amazon.
Yeah, it was the
that's the garage.
Yeah, exactly.
The music
it was
center.
The place where they have rehearsals and stuff like that. So I'm there, and I found it so funny. I mean, I was laughing so hard it hurt, and there was tears coming down my eyes. And you know when it gets to the point you're just snorting. Because it's embarrassing,
yeah, it
but you can't help
it
anymore.
And
so,
that's before the joke started.
Exactly. So what happened was when they finished, I got introduced to the director and I said, I bet anything you're going to get nominated for at least 5 Tony Awards. And they won 5. But what happened was the leads came out to me and some of the cast and they said, we were getting so much joy watching you enjoy yourself. They said, can we pay you to laugh in the audience? So it wound up.
That was your next job.
By good fortune, I got invited to go to the opening night at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. Okay, at the Amazon and then the Dorothy Chandler for the after party. So I now am seeing this Drowsy Chaperone in all its regalia and all the costuming and everything like that. My laugh was reverberating throughout the Amazon
Theater. You're a professional
laugher. It was beyond funny.
Better than canned laughter.
Oh, please. If you need a laugh, just call me. Just please.
I need a laugh, but it's usually about 3 o'clock in the morning when I wake up and I say, oh my God, my kids are graduating. I have to pay the bills.
Yeah, but it just comes. I just enjoy life.
I need a good laugh.
I enjoy life.
I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. I have to go to the bathroom.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know.
But
do
you prefer being on the screen or TV
I came
films
out here
or live?
Yeah, I took the big risk and I sold everything. Didn't know a soul. Came out here to LA in 2005.
So your 4 years you were after 2001 you sort of
got my
acting.
Way networking
was going
through.
To classes.
I was figuring it out, training, right. And then I got my opportunity and I was like, I want TV and film. And at that point it was LA.
Yeah.
Because New York had not really come up yet in terms of shows. But I've always loved TV. I've always loved the movies.
So from 2005 until now, you've built this whole career.
Exactly. I reinvented myself.
And you're enjoying yourself, obviously.
I love it. Put a script in my hand. I'm going to get emotional. I'm the happiest person on earth. Yeah. I really am. But it's joyful tears.
Right.
And it hasn't been easy. It's been a roller coaster ride. But... you know, if you have
a dream...
Are
you having fun?
I love it. If you have a dream and you go after it, it doesn't matter. It's like... And you're never too old. It's never too old to start to go after what you always
wanted. Well, before we forget, tell people where they could reach you and where they could see you on the internet.
Well, I'm on Facebook under Claudia DiMartino, DiMartino. I'm on YouTube. Just look me up on YouTube under my name.
That's what I was watching some of your things on YouTube. You have a lot going there.
Yeah, I'm also on IMDb.
Have you done a biography?
Well,
you haven't been in it too long, but some people start early.
Well, funny you should mention that. Okay. I'm actually working on my solo show.
All right. That's something to talk about.
Yeah.
Go for it.
And it's something I kind of sensed I was going to do, but it wasn't until the end of last year that I got introduced to... a solo teacher who's giving back. Her name is Jessica Lynn Johnson, and she does Soaring Solo Artists, and she's giving back. And I've been taking classes with her on now it's Monday afternoons, and learning the nuances of telling my story. And in June, this past June, I actually have written, and I did an excerpt, which is now up on YouTube, 15 minutes. And it's...
So we can look it up.
You can look it up. You can look it up to Claudia DiMartino, and it's called It's Only Lipstick. And it's my journey from childhood through elementary school with those nuns and my growing up in an Italian-American family in Brooklyn, New York. And
being a minority.
Exactly.
Among Jews.
Exactly. I was the token Italian in Abraham Lincoln High School.
Right.
I really was.
It's surprising because when I went to Lincoln, which was a little before you, when I went to Lincoln, if you were Italian, you went to parochial school.
Guilty.
Yeah, you didn't. Yeah, but you went to parochial high school.
They didn't call it Catholic school.
No, it was Saint. It was Saint something or other.
Exactly.
Well, whatever the saint was, but because most of the kids, my Italian friends, never went to public schools. And it turned out to be all Jewish because the other minority groups never went to high school. Hmm. Because it was just a way of life back then.
Well, I took the tests to get into parochial high school, but I was never good at those standardized tests. I would freeze, and I missed by 1 point.
I thought all you did was pay.
You talk about freezing. You get up before people, okay, before a camera. And part of that ability is due to the fact that you were in marketing for a number of years. So you get the opportunity to, you know, bullshit the people. And after a while, it becomes natural. But I remember back in high school, one of the English classes, I think was in the second half of the second year. And we had to write something, a page or whatever it was. And you had to get up in front of the class and read it to everyone. Mm-hmm. So everybody did their thing. And I remember one guy, I don't remember his name, but I remember it like it happened yesterday. He got up in front of the class. He held a sheet of paper in his hand. And he stood there. And he froze. You could see the sweat coming down his forehead.
And that was the first time you met Jerry Orbach?
No, Jerry Orbach wasn't at all like that. He was a natural. But I felt sorry for this kid. I said, oh, God, the teacher should say, okay, enough. And he stood up there for maybe a minute altogether. To this kid, it must have seemed like an hour or longer.
Oh, sure.
And when he said, okay, sit down, I thought the kid was going to die right in his seat. Mm-hmm. That's how frightened he was. Scared to death.
Well, I think we all go through that. I mean, when I was an assistant marketing manager, I mean, I would hold on to the podium for dear life and like shake. Mm-hmm. But I used to get called out a lot because I would get very passionate about what I was speaking about.
That's surprising.
I'd be very colorful where everybody else was very stoic and they would be very business oriented in the way they approach their presentations. And I'm with the hands and I'm with the voice and the inflections. Mm-hmm. And I used to get called out because of it. Mm-hmm. But it's like I've learned to be who I am.
Well, as a matter of fact,
She talked about marketing, whatever, because you're doing that. A couple of people have said to me, have you ever done acting? I said, no, but I've been in consulting for so long. You know, if that isn't acting, what is?
But, I mean, if you're going to market something and you want people to buy it,
yeah.
How can you not be passionate about what you're selling?
You have to.
How
Otherwise,
can people
never
believe
sell.
You?
Well, the first thing I've been in sales in a long time, you have to sell yourself.
Exactly. It's all about you.
Because products, a lot of products are very equal. But people buy not necessarily the product, they buy you.
If you can sell yourself, you could sell any. You could sell ice to an Eskimo in the wintertime.
Well, that's why when I first came out to L.A. and I got into the radio sales, I had to buy a good car. Mm-hmm. I had to buy good suits. And my brother said, But I used to, have either Mercedes or a Jaguar. I love Jaguars. But my brother said, well, why can't you get this beat-up car? What do you need?
Oh, my goodness, no.
I said, I pick up clients. I take them to lunch.
Exactly.
And even if we meet for lunch, the valet brings a car. People only buy from people who they think are successful.
Exactly. You don't want a clunker. Because if
they think you're successful, they say, oh, he must have something. His product must be good.
Exactly.
I mean, that's sales. But anyway, I think, which we've been talking about, I want Claudia to do her own show here.
From what I see, I think she can.
And do, well, especially to do her characters and be part of Malcolm Digital Radio.
Can you do some characters now?
I can do, I'll do my grandmother. I mean, she was like, she mitered the English language. She spoke fluent Italian.
You speak Italian?
No.
Yeah. You speak better Yiddish than Italian.
I speak better Yiddish than Italian. But I mean, she would go like, okay, one of the things she used to do was like, I want you to boil Burl the Earl.
Burl the Earl.
Burl the Earl. And people go, what does that mean? It's like, you don't understand about Burl the Earl? And it's like, it means boil the oil. And Italians use a lot of oil, you know, a lot of Earl.
A lot of Earl.
A lot of Earl.
And a lot of hands.
A lot of hands. And, but was priceless about my grandmother. You know, everybody has their characters in their family. She was, sorry, I'm having trouble doing her because I'm getting
emotional.
Too close right now.
Well, tell
a story. She worked in the garment center. She started when she was 16 years old, you know, and the sweatshops and all that kind of stuff. And she wanted to be a designer and all of that, but she was like the premier seamstress in the lingerie. Okay. And she would make her own clothes, and she tried to teach me how to make my own clothes. Mm-hmm. But she had this thing. She would wear these ratty house dresses all the time with the shoes that wouldn't fit right, with the rolled-up stockings under the knees, the typical Italian mother, right?
Actually, she sounds like a typical Jewish
exactly.
Jewish grandmother
yeah,
also.
Right,
but
exactly.
She always had to put the best face forward. So whenever she had to go out, she would come. We lived in one house with three separate apartments. We were 10 people, an extended family, all living under one roof. Very tiny apartments.
I remember those.
Yeah, and it's like everybody knew everybody's business. There was no privacy, nothing. So she would come and sit, and she would have all of her jewelry on, her gold or her diamonds, with the ratty house dress on, as she was waiting to get dressed. It was ridiculous.
Like she was going someplace.
She was going someplace, but she was in this ratty house dress. And then she would be in the ratty house dress, and she would sweep the leaves. She didn't want any leaves. We had all these old trees around, and they would always drop the leaves.
This is a place on
East 2nd Street, Avenue U.
Avenue U, yeah, okay.
Right.
I know.
Would go up the whole block and sweep everybody's
Everyone.
Leaves. So one day I said to her, Nana, why are you she would complain all the time about nobody sweeps the leaves. And it's like, well, why should they, Nana? They have you. And it was the truth. But my mother.
But when it snowed, did she shovel everyone's
no,
sidewalk?
No, that was my uncle or my dad. Or, you know, my cousins, Wayne and Mark. They would get to shovel.
Wayne and Martin?
Mark.
Oh, Wayne and
they
Mark.
They would shovel. You know, but for some reason, I can do Yiddish a lot better than I can do my own Italian family right now.
Yeah, I hear.
That depends on my moment. Yeah. This is my moment.
You just mentioned some different names. You had the Italian.
Mm-hmm.
Name was Wayne.
Wayne. That's my cousin
That's
Wayne.
Not typically an Italian name. Usually the guys are named
Tony. Anthony.
Or Anthony. Yeah. Anthony, Tony, yeah. And
Antonio.
Marco.
Yeah. Roll the R's.
And all of the girls were named Maria.
Well, I'm Claudia.
You're Claudia.
I'm Claudia. Okay.
Well, actually, I was named by the toss of a coin.
Uh-oh. Okay, tell that story.
My sister was born first, and they couldn't decide between Deborah or Claudia. So they flipped the coin,
and
it came up.
Was it an Italian coin?
No, it was not a quarter.
It was a quarter.
It was a quarter.
A quarter.
So was Deborah heads or tails?
I have no idea. I think she was tails. Oh. But she was Deborah, and I remember my dad always saying, his father would say, "Che cash precli nombre che?" What kind of a name is that?
Yeah, my father used to say that also.
You know, che cash
precli
nombre che? Italian. You know, dialectic Italian. That's the only thing I remember. Che cash precli nombre che? And I can say, "Mi chiamo Claudia Di Martino." That's okay. About it. And, you know.
Well, you do it well.
I have good ears.
Your sister.
She's
sounds separate. Like you were born at the same time. Are
no,
you
she's
twins?
She's 2.5 years ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
And then, so when I was born, there was no toss coin. I was a girl showed
right.
up,
yep,
and
that was
it was Claudia.
You're Claudia.
You got the last name.
Exactly. So, but, and it's funny, it's when I came out here, I get called Claudia a lot.
Claudia.
Because there's such a...
It's a Latino.
Latino. And, yeah. So, and I like it.
How do they pronounce it in Italy?
Claudia.
Claudia, okay. Yeah.
When I've traveled, every place I've been, people think I'm that nationality. I'm kind of a melting pot. When I went to Italy, of course, Claudia. Yeah. When I was in Greece, they thought I was Greek. When I was in Spain, they thought I was Spanish. Yeah. You know, that whole thing.
You're like a chameleon.
Yeah, exactly. I take the Berlitz book, and I practice my phraseologies, and I have a very good ear for dialects, and I'm able to do them.
Which you would need in your business.
Exactly.
Whatever the role is.
Exactly.
We're looking for a West African. Oh, sure, I could do that.
You know, the first time I heard an English actor speak with an American accent, I was floored. Wow, how do they do that?
Yeah.
When you've seen American actors do with a British accent for years and years and years.
Well, what's funny is when you hear the either Australian or South African, or when they speak with a British accent, actors in American series, and you've only heard them speaking English as an American, and then when you see them on interview shows, mm-hmm. and they're speaking with their accent, like
it's really different.
Hugh Laurie, I think it is. From
he's wonderful. Mm-hmm.
And you know, who is that guy? He's speaking with a British accent.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the worst ones are the ones from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
I know they're speaking the same language, but I don't know what the hell they're saying.
I know.
No, you speak the Scots.
Yes. Ooh. Well, for some reason, I can do an Irish accent.
Yeah.
I can go into an Irish very easily. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Good.
But
makes you more available to a lot of other parts.
If there are any agents out there or casting directors, you know, contact us. Again, give us your contact.
Well, it's Claudia DiMartino.
Spell it. A lot of people.
Claudia, capital D-I, capital M-A-R-T-I-N-O. I am, you can find me, just look me up on Google, IMDb. My agents are on Essential Artists.
And we found out that she has agents but no managers, except I just signed her up.
Oh, no.
So you can contact me.
On your part, yes.
Your name is plastered all over.
The world.
I go into a men's room at the gas station, will I see your name on the wall?
There is some propriety here. You know, we must have some decorum, and I'm a lady, so we have to remember that.
I respect that.
Thank you.
But what I enjoy about this is I've done radio shows and local radio. It's only heard within the range of the city or how powerful the signal is.
Yes.
This is capable of reaching around the world. I've had people, friends, that have contacted me from France, from Israel, from England, saying, I didn't know you were on internet.
Malcolm,
how did you find me?
We've had people come on the air from foreign countries a number of times.
Yeah, but they haven't called up because basically we're not live right now. We're a podcast.
Well, you know, that's better because this way you don't get annoying phone calls in the middle, mm-hmm. which I really didn't like, because you never know when you get a nutcase calling in with some stupid question for which you don't have an answer, okay? This way, write in, call in, send us an email, and if we like, we'll answer it. If we don't, we'll just toss it.
Wait a minute. I thought there were no stupid questions.
Oh, you'd be surprised. Most of them are stupid, actually.
So, but now getting back to your career, what do you have lined up now? Do you have anything, or can we see you in anything?
Well, I've been auditioning lately, so thank God for that. So I'm excited about that. But I'm working, as I said, on my solo show, which I'm targeting to have up and running January, February of next year for Solo Fest.
You have to come back and let us know.
Yeah. Do you stand up?
I did do stand-up, but I realized...
Well, right now you're sitting.
I'm sitting, exactly. I realized I'm more of a storyteller.
Okay.
And this medium of solo show, it gives me the ability to tell my story. And I can play characters. I can really emote and get into it. And I love it. I really do love it.
But speaking about comedy or storytelling, I find that the comics that I like best are the ones that tell stories about themselves, but they're really telling stories. It's not like a punchline joke. That's what funny stories about what happened in their life.
Yeah, exactly.
Red Buttons did that to the nth degree.
And actually, I've written a pilot for my sitcom, so I'm excited about that. And for me, I like it to be the situation that drives the comedy. The rest of it is just the people's reactions and the fun of it and all that kind of stuff. But the situations are so ridiculous. They're funny.
I hate laugh tracks. Oh, do I? But I think I've heard you on some laugh tracks.
No, no, you haven't. No, maybe my own.
They secretly recorded you. But I hate laugh tracks when someone comes in and says, good morning. And
and everybody laughs. It's so stupid and dumb. It's unbelievable.
Well, I like things real. I like things that are legitimate. I like honesty.
Well, that's part of the reason I like what we're doing now. We just do 55 minutes straight through. If there's, if it's slow, it's slow. If it's funny, it's funny. If it's not
funny, it's never slow. Come on. It may not always be funny, but it's not slow.
We're not edited.
That's obvious.
and I used to love the TV show back in the old days when you had like the Red Skelton show.
Oh, I loved that show.
Basically, when he goofed, he would just make fun out of himself.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Well, even the Carol Burnett show.
Carol Burnett show.
And I was reading recently that they used to take a bet as to who would break character first.
Harvey Korman.
Korman usually wrote with Tim Conway.
Tim Conway.
And Harvey Korman always broke first.
Right. Well, Tim Conway used to say during the rehearsals, he'd do it straight. But during the show itself, he'd add certain lines.
Exactly.
Trying to crack up him. And when they do it, because now they're selling all the old shows, you see Tim Conway come in and say the line, and both Carol Burnett and Harvey Korman like turn around. And you see their bodies shaking like they're trying to control their laughter.
Exactly.
Well, if you ever look on YouTube, they have a lot of the old appearances of Rodney Dangerfield. All of his comedy, he's making fun of himself. Never of you or me or anybody else. Himself only. And I saw one the other week. I just happened to stumble on it. I couldn't stop laughing. The guy was incredibly funny. And he never really made it big.
Till after he was 40. He retired after. I think he started out acting and being a comic. And then he quit for a number of years because he was supporting a family. And then I think it was 42 because he's...
So what did he do? Become a waiter?
No, I think... Not an accountant. He sold paint.
Survival stuff.
He was a salesman.
Okay.
And they have a good clip on YouTube in the Johnny Carson show when he was on Johnny Carson. He's like about...
Selling paint or just doing the comedy?
Doing the comedy. Okay. No respect.
No respect.
But... They have, which is like amazing,
starting to laugh because it was always so funny.
But they have, Carson, he interviews someone, he gets the best out of the interview. Now you have Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, I love them.
Jimmy Fallon, but they do different shticks. They do but it's only like four or five minutes or something.
I refer to them as the Battle of the Jimmys.
But Carson interviewed somebody in depth, and he could have a good interview.
He was a natural.
For 20 minutes.
Yeah.
He had that innate ability. Not everyone has it.
Like he had Rodney Dangerfield on, and you found out all about him. He is so funny. When the original Robin, I don't know if you ever saw the Robin Williams, the first time he was on Carson, it's hysterical.
He was insane.
Right.
That's an understatement.
Well, you know who his idol was, who actually was insane.
Jonathan Winters.
And Jonathan Winters had been committed sometimes, but I think more for depression.
Was he?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
They were, we talk about that we have top of the mind. These guys would go on tangents.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know something else a lot of people don't appreciate?
That, right? No, I never go on a tangent. I be discovered
from
as
what I see, yeah, you can be discovered.
I'm going to discover you right now.
I just discovered you. That's Malcolm. Anyway. I think if you see in a lot of different plays or movies, TV or whatever, I think I see the best actors and actresses are those that have done comedy. Comedy is a form of acting and probably the most difficult. Mm-hmm. If someone can do comedy, they generally make an incredible serious actor. Mm-hmm. Mickey Rooney,
yes.
Okay? Milton Berle. Red Buttons. You could go on and on.
Well, Mickey Rooney wasn't a comic.
Well, he tried to be funny.
But he did funny stuff.
I enjoy both comedy and drama. And my agent once asked me, she says, Claudio, why do you want to be an actress? And I said to her, I want to touch people. either to help people to laugh and touch the funny bone, or if they're hurting in some way, to just release it. And there's a healing in tears. There's something the drama can do for somebody. And that's why I love this.
So like a service dog.
Well, there's something called, dramedy?
Dramedy,
it's a combination of...
Which
I like the best. Something based on real life. And it's not funny to the outside world, except for the situation.
Exactly.
Situationally funny.
Exactly.
Malcolm, everything is based on either the art is based on real life, or real life somehow is based on
comedy,
the art.
Comedy is heightened drama, if you think about it. It's heightened.
It's
very intense, and it's at another level.
Some people will say it's a low class of drama and acting.
I forget who said it, but it was dying is easy. Make someone laugh is hard.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the famous actors, like Laurence Olivier or something.
That's true,
like that.
Yeah.
But it must be hard being a stand-up comic, because as you go in, people say, okay, make me laugh.
Well, actually, it's funny. I tried stand-up about 8 years ago, and I had my moment at the Hollywood Improv.
It's
my graduation. And it's up on YouTube.
Do you get paid when you go there?
That I did, because I was trying it out.
Okay.
And it was a friendly audience, kind of thing. And I was surprised
with
the laughter.
They didn't throw any rotten tomatoes or eggs.
No, thankfully, no. And I got laughs. I was very pleased. I was surprised. It felt good to get some laughs. But it's like, okay, I tried this. And then I was invited to do it as I forget what you call it. When you have your main stand-up person, your main act, and then your
opening act.
Yeah.
Okay.
Opening. So I was invited to do it one more time with someone. And I did it. It's like, okay, but it's just not doing it for me.
From what I know of you, you're only limited by what you want to do.
Exactly.
There's so many areas that you can that you're good, because you pop out.
Thank you.
Because when I've seen you on the YouTube, it's you.
But Malcolm, if you want to be really good at it, you have to be able to do more than just what you want
exactly.
to do.
No, you have to do what you get paid to do also.
Well, that goes without saying.
I mean, I want to do a lot of things, but first of all, they might be illegal, but you don't necessarily get paid for it.
Yeah, okay, Malcolm, stop bragging.
Bragging?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. My acting coach would always say, I don't know if I'm going to get this right or not. He always said, acting is simple, but it's the hardest thing you'll ever do.
That again?
Acting is simple, but it's the hardest thing you'll ever do.
Okay. Well, the thing is, everybody thinks they can act. Everybody, that's easy, because you pretend.
Yeah.
I had this friend.
Make believe.
I had a friend of mine, Ron Silver, who's since passed away, fantastic actor. And I've seen him several times, like on Broadway and different shows, and I'd be in the dressing room, before the show, talking to him. And it was like about a half hour before he kicked us all out, because he had to get into the role. And then I saw him on stage. I didn't recognize him. Not that he wore different makeup or clothing.
He took on
a different personality.
Exactly.
But it was so believable. I was saying, is that Ron? And then when I went backstage afterwards, he was Ronnie.
Back to himself.
When I was here and, really training with acting coaches and teachers, where I was struggling, I was so corporate. I had to learn how to shed that skin. And I was working with my acting teacher, and may I say his name?
Yeah.
Philip Charles McKenzie. And
For some reason I know.
Yes, Philip Charles McKenzie. He was a Cable Ace Award winner for the show Brothers on Showtime, and a renowned comedic director, sitcom director.
But what did he do before Philip McKenzie?
He was an actor.
Was he involved in a comedy group?
Not that I know of.
Except there was no comedy group called War Babies, and he sounds like he's...
I don't know his full...
So check out.
I will. I'll check it out.
Check out if he's ever in War Babies.
But he directed like full seasons of Roseanne and stuff like that, and I was very blessed that he's been my teacher. But he spent a half an hour with me, and I broke because he hit me where I lived, and he was very honest and truthful with me. And once I came to terms with I had to let go, it made the difference for me.
You've been to a lot of different classes.
Yes, I have.
Are any of them scams?
For
people that might be listening, for them to watch out for.
You have to be very careful. And my advice would be recommended by someone who's been going to teachers. Not every teacher is for everybody. We all have – I've tried different methods and stuff, and I've learned that the method that I – it's not even a method. It's more organic for me. That's what works for me.
Well, now that we're talking about organic, it's the end of our show.
It costs more at Ralph's. That's all I know about organic.
Yeah, go shop at Trader Joe's. Anyway, where could they see you?
Well, obviously on I'm YouTube right now.
YouTube.
You have my full blast of what I've done on there. My clips are on there. My excerpt from my solo show is on there. My stand-up is on there.
But nothing yet about a pending biography other than the solo show.
That's pretty big. It's a lot of work to write that. And to get the characters down, and I didn't realize how intense that was.
And you will be in it only by
yourself.
No support.
Just me.
Okay, with that note, say goodbye, Stan.
Why should I say goodbye? Nowhere, girl.
Say goodbye, girl.
Goodbye, Stan. Goodbye,
okay.
Malcolm. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, we're over 55 minutes.
Right. Okay.
Eric, you fell asleep again.
Aaron, it's a wrap.